You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, a weekly series that brings you exclusive, in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting and exciting artists in hip-hop. We're brought to you by RapGenius.com, your source on the internet for decoding, annotating, and analyzing rap lyrics. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. On this episode, we talk to two members of one of rap's most formidable collectives. AG and OC of the Diggin' in the Crates crew join us for a memorable chat. The crew, whose members include Showbiz, AG, Diamond D, Lord Finesse, Fat Joe, OC, Buckwild, and the late Big L, is responsible for some of the best and most influential New York City hip-hop of the 1990s, and they have continued making great music right up until today. We chat with AG and OC about their new Love New York project, their classic debut albums, Runaway Slave and Word Life, their memories of deceased crew member Big L, the influence of the esoteric and influential 5% Nation of Islam on their work, the oddest shoutouts they've ever gotten, and lots more. I met up with the two rappers at our shows Home Away From Home, Three Egg Studios in Brooklyn. I started by asking them about their new album, released just last month, Love New York. The very first thing I wanted to talk about was you guys have an album coming out just a couple weeks from now. The Love New York album. We actually have the producer Ray West in the studio with us if you want to say hi for the audio. There you go.
Love New York.
And can you tell us a little bit about the record, how it came about? So it's you guys and Cool Keith and Rock Marciano.
Yes. Red Apples 45 is the label.
Yeah.
It's a very tight-knit family, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Love New York is an album consisting of, produced by Ray West, AG, OC, Rock Mars, Bamboo Brothers, Cool Keith, and... in spirit, party, arty. You know
right.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's always, you know, spiritual vibes over our projects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Love New York is consists of these artists, and it's not a compilation album, so to speak. It's just an album, and Love New York is the name of the group and the album.
Excellent. So you're all on all the songs, or some of you are on?
No, some got solo songs. Mm-hmm. Some is blend. Like the album starts off with OC's solo Legacy Flag. It's real good, you know what I mean? Then it goes into, you know, maybe me and Cool Keith and Rock Moss. It's just a lot of different blends that Ray West put together. But it was like, in Ray West's studio, you know, that element right there is always coming and going. So, you know, eventually Ray West got enough of the songs up, the vibe up, let everybody know what we were doing. And it's getting great feedback, you know. They label it as a super group, which is dope to me.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, excellent. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you guys, obviously both have pretty storied careers.
Mm-hmm.
So, AG, I wanted to start with you. We were talking before about off camera about slang, mm-hmm. and about how the first time that I and a lot of other people heard the term represent was on one of your songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, even before, you know, the Nas song that made it famous. I wanted to ask about another bit of slang, which is, you know, the phrase beat digging, right? Mm-hmm. Very common today, but when you guys started using it for Digging in the Crates, even on the song Digging in the Crates,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't really a common phrase. I mean, did you guys invent it? Where did it come from?
The word just come from actually the act of, you know, the producers and digging. You know, OC and myself, we just rap. You know,
right.
Everybody else produces as well. And, you know, when you have the records and the old crates and all of that, and you're looking through them, it's called digging in the crates. And the guys that's down with us, you know, travel all over the world to look for certain rare records. And, you know, it became an art. Like, if we would go to Europe, Germany, and we land, OC might want to go to his room. I might want to smoke a blunt. You know where Finesse, Diamond, and Show or Buck is going. Mm-hmm. They're going to the record store immediately for 4, 5, 6 hours and dig for records and beats.
And maybe even spending $5, $500,
yeah.
or $5,000.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe on 2 or 3 records.
Wow.
Like, but it was an art, like you said. Like, it's an art. It wasn't something that they was just, you know, getting something that people can identify right off the bat. They was digging for obscure stuff people never heard of, names, groups, soloists.
True.
You know, and that's the art of digging.
And when we came out at that time, there aren't too many dudes doing that.
Right.
So to have a collective group of 4 or 5 producers doing it, the name Digging in the Crates was perfect.
Yeah. So speaking of DITC, OC, how would you describe, like, the overall, like, DITC aesthetic, right? What do you guys all have in common, both personally and musically? Like, is there something that brings you all? It's a pretty disparate group of people. Like.
Something in common?
Yeah.
I mean, to fast forward, we did a song called Alpha Male on Oasis.
Yeah.
That would probably, for me, my opinion, personally describe each member, because everybody's so headstrong, you know, outside of the gift, you know what I'm saying? I always clarify to people, what we have is a gift, it's not a talent. Like, to be doing this 27 years later, it's not a talent. It's a gift, you know what I mean? It's a God-given, Buddha, Allah, whoever you want to, you know, refer to, but for us, it's a God-given, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like A is headstrong, we don't agree on things, but a lot of the stuff we do agree on, same with Show, same with Finesse, same with whoever else in the crew.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what makes us unique in my mind. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to sit there and tell me, yeah, that's cool, I'm going to follow you up behind that. If he don't like a lyric to something that I wrote,
yeah,
he let me know and it turned the same thing.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Show does it or I don't, and we'll change it, or we'll say, nah, we ain't changing that. You know what I mean? Like, you got your feel about it, this is how we feel. But we're headstrong, so that's what keeps the cohesive, like, not being yes men with each other.
Right. Speaking of that bond, AG, so speaking of the bond, obviously the song The Bond is something I wanted to talk about. It's about the effect that music industry can have on personal relationships, something obviously you guys know quite a bit about. The lyrics reference the split up of Tribe, of Pete and CL Smooth, of NWA, EPMD, even the Beatles, right? And
Supremes, Dynamo.
Yeah,
Supremes.
Exactly. And it talks about
there's
this line on the tune about diggers who took the brand for granted.
Even my digging niggas
took the brand for granted.
We supposed to put the city on our shoulders like Manning.
I was wondering if you could. First off, you and AG have been working together. You and Show have been working together for 20 plus years. How have you kept the relationship alive this long? And what's the story behind the digger line?
First of all, what OC said, we're not yes men, and sometimes to create a greater bond, you must conflict.
Yeah, it's alpha, man.
And we and Show have no problem conflicting.
Yeah,
there's times we went months, years without speaking.
Wow.
But nothing wrong. When I see him, but we preserved it by being real with each other on any aspect. You know what I mean? If there's a problem, we stop it there.
Yeah.
You know, in that time frame, before it lingers, because that little problem causes you to make bad decisions in your business,
right?
Just because emotionally you may not be feeling something about your partner or group member, and you're taking that into the business side of it. But once you keep it real all the time, and no one's going to agree all the time, but the fact that you're being honest, that creates, you know, a lot of room for longevity. And that's, in my opinion, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I think this was God sent Showbiz and AG. I mean that from my heart.
Like, it flows. The name chemistry, flows.
Yeah.
Everything. This is something bigger than us.
And to add on to that, I hear a lot of groups, a lot of dudes say, yeah, we fought toward the studio. We don't do that. We don't put hands on each other.
Mm-hmm. Just verbally strong, opinionated brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might rub our heads together, arguing, spinning each other's face, but we're not putting hands on each other.
Right.
It's not happening.
Wow. So the one thing, OC, one thing that I wanted to talk to you about, moving back to the very beginning, mm-hmm. right? On Fantastic, you say your first LP came straight from your soul. Mm-hmm. What about Word Life you think made it so successful?
I was young. I didn't think about selling records. I was just thinking about my feeling at that time was, damn, people are gonna hear me and people are gonna judge me, maybe, to see if I'm a dope lyricist like other people being judged or not. He's either dope or he's not, and that's what mattered to me, the money. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we had the material stuff before we came into the game, so it wasn't about materialistic stuff. It was about the love for the music, and I really love what I do.
No doubt.
And it reflected through their music, my music, my crew's music. When you listen to that first album, you can never duplicate that feeling.
Yeah.
That's
incredible. A more technical writing question. You often have like line endings in unusual places, rhymes in unusual places, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
That's that dude, right?
You know what
there.
I mean? How did you learn to do that? Like, is there another rapper you kind of took ideas from, or like?
Two MCs.
Yeah.
Before I linked up with Diggin, was Prince Poe and Pharoah March, Organized Confusion.
Right.
And when I lived in Queens, Pharoah lived across the street from me, so sitting around him and Poe, I never heard people rhyme like that outside of G-Rap, mm-hmm. Kane, you know what I mean, Rakim, and just sitting around them every day just taught me, you know, how to cadence, rhythms, runs, patterns, you know, and they always kind of try to say one is better than the other with Organized, but they was both unique. March is probably more, how can I say, to the point, mm-hmm. but he still throws his riddles, where Poe is complex. And they just blew me away with that, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it leads, everything happens for a reason, because I went on the first Source tour with them, and I met Lord Finesse and Buck. So this is how it flows into Diggin.
Nice.
I didn't meet Show and AG yet, but I met Lord Finesse on that tour, and I met Buck.
Yeah.
You know, he brought Buck on that tour, and that's how I fit into that equation.
Nice. Yeah, I talked to Munch actually on for our show a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned working with you in the early days, and they didn't work with anybody.
Nah,
I just told him.
He just said that.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, they were totally like very very exclusive. So show AG. I'm sorry.
I get that all the time.
I'm sorry. 40 Acres of My Props, right? Go back to the beginning, right? Very openly critical of record labels. Obviously compares record contracts to the 40 Acres and a Mule idea, right? So you did your first record independent, the very first thing, right? Mm-hmm. The Soul Clap deal. Mm-hmm. And you just put out your first free mixtape, getting back into that end of things. What do you think about
that?
The preloaded thing?
Show and AG's.
Yeah, Show and AG's.
Yes,
preloaded,
sure.
Yeah. So what do you think about the mixtape scene? What do you think about the opportunities for releasing music independently now that the internet has given artists?
First off, I hate the word mixtape.
Okay.
Because everything I've put out in mixtape form were really albums that mm-hmm. were free. That was the only difference between an album I would give you and you pay for on iTunes and an album that you downloaded for free. It wasn't someone else's music. It was all original, organic music that was free. It's free, so I don't really like the word mixtape, but mm-hmm. Preloaded was a album, a prelude to Mugshot Music.
Right.
I think independent at this stage, with all the experience that I've been through, I think it's the only way to go.
Started out that way.
You know what I mean? This music game, I call it a game because it seems like it is at times.
Yeah.
It'll take your soul. It'll take everything you got to be successful. Shouldn't you own that at the end of the day? You know what I mean? Shouldn't you have say-so in which way things should go, what songs should be put out? Because, you know, I've heard musicians basically insane. Anyone to want to make music as a career is insane. It's unstable. You know, it's a lot of false advertising involved in it. So you're going through so much trials and tribulations. Shouldn't you own it?
Yeah.
To do that and someone else owns it at the end of the day can suck the life out of you. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
That's why I would feel like you can be independent and partner with a bigger situation, but you should have the last say-so over your music and where it's going.
Definitely.
And financially as well.
And you think that's starting to happen more and more for
It happens
artists.
Because I think it's very limited artists getting on major labels.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're really narrowing that down. There's only three labels if you want to be technical. Period. You know what I mean? So if you look at the game, it's going closer and closer to like this. It's going to be one outlet for this mainstream music, and I don't want to be caught up in that. I'd rather make the. This is how hip hop started, though. You know what I'm saying? It started by dudes not being able to get heard and went in the park and did their own thing.
Right. And speaking of the park, I mean, obviously you're from Patterson.
Yeah.
Originally.
Yes.
Right?
BX.
Yeah. And I mentioned, which is, of course, that very project mentioned on South Bronx,
yes.
on that tune. So
yes.
I'm guessing because of, without getting the specifics, you're, you know, a bit younger than KRS. So I'm sure maybe you weren't around for the very early park and high school jams and stuff like that, or were too young or something.
No,
you were there? Wow.
I have an older brother, LB.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Lobo Berry. And he was very much embedded in the culture. And at that young age, I had to do whatever he did to go outside.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a privilege.
So were
you
first?
Him and his friends break dance in the library, you know, and like, what's this? And then, you know, in bed, we had to sleep in the same bed, and he's making me finish the lines to his rhymes. Like, I didn't really want to do that.
Right.
But he would beat me up if I didn't. So it's like, all right. So, like, if we're going to sleep and he'll say a line and I got to catch him. Whenever he talks and says a line, I got to finish the line with a word that rhymes. So it started becoming fun to me. You know what I mean? And I started getting good at it. And the girls started noticing it. And it was different. You know, it's one thing to sell drugs and do something bad or mischievous to get attention. But to do something that's inside you and just express yourself and people think that you're special from that,
mm-hmm.
I knew from then this is what it was. I go across the street to the park jam. You got Grandmaster Flash, Grand Wizard Theodore.
Mm-hmm.
This is right in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it was very much, I mean, B-Boy Records. I used to go down the block and wait outside just to see if I saw KRS-One come out. Never did, but I'm three blocks away.
Yeah.
So it was my borough. It's like, it's everything to me, you know what I mean?
That's incredible. Speaking of history, OC, on your tune Story to Tell,
mm-hmm.
you talk about your childhood sports career
mm-hmm.
and how you were, seems you were a pretty great quarterback growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah? When did you stop playing ball?
Well, first of all, I had big hands. I probably had the same size hands as a kid. So I could grip a basketball, football at 7, 8, and when I moved to Queens, I think Farrell and Prince was going to Art and Design.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This is where
that's the art
Kango Crew,
yeah.
Slick Rick, you know, Dana Dane and them went to the school. I think Marb went later on, they were a little younger.
That's right. Printing, right?
I think it's connected.
Yeah.
So I seen the park jams from Bushwick all the way to South Jamaica, Queens. And, you know, I was back and forth because I had family in Brooklyn and Queens. And once I got to the sitting in the studio session with Favre and Prince, sports was just like, I played basketball for leisure, but I wanted to. I knew what I wanted to do, and that was rap.
Excellent. I wanted to for AG to jump ahead for a second to Goodfellas, to the second record.
My favorite album.
Yeah, it's total straight up hard rhyming, right? There's not, you know, the beats are a lot more stripped down. There's not any of the like social commentary stuff that there was on the first record.
The medicine.
Yeah. And I guess, like, you know, why did that record have such a different tone? Was it, like, a decision? Did it happen organically? And also, like, because it was recorded over 3 years, was it hard to keep it a cohesive record?
Runaway Slave is really probably our most classical work, in my opinion. And that show's brainchild. That's really all show. You know what I mean? With a lot of the concepts. Actually, he was rhyming.
Right, he rhymed on that
so
record.
So I follow his lead a lot, you know what I'm saying? And he's a real DJ producer, so, you know, I like to follow the producer's lead a lot because they live with the record way longer than you heard it for the first time.
Yeah.
So they have certain ideas with it.
And that's the original format of hip-hop, the DJ first.
Yeah, for sure.
Then the MC. Right. Pop.
Nah, you're absolutely right. So we came out with that in 92.
Right.
And we came out with Goodfellas in 95.
Yeah.
That was 3 years of nothing. We touring and all that, but not putting music out. And I always had a chip on my shoulder coming from the Bronx. I'm not just going to be in this and not be a good lyricist and not be an MC. You know what I mean? And a lot of the time through that project, I expressed a lot of conscious and conceptual ideas during Runaway Slave.
Yeah.
I felt, besides like songs like Represent and stuff like that, they were, this album should have a different flavor to me expressing. We show who you are as a producer. I think Runaway Slave is a producer's album. Goodfellas is more like, give me the grimiest beat you got. And let me rhyme on these joints. And that's where you see the Ghetto Dwellers and other
Method Man
on the album, which we didn't do on the first one because the first one was more conscious. That's what we were in at the time. You know, I would wear Malcolm X buttons and have a stack of Farrakhan tapes. So Runaway Slave was what was on my mind at the time.
Yeah.
Goodfellas was more of, I was out in the street with my dudes, we touring. It's a lot of cats in the game. I want to be one of the best. This is an opportunity to give me some of the most darkest, grimiest beats, and let me attack those.
Is it true Method's only on the record because you ran into him on the way to the store?
In the studio.
Studio, yeah.
Yeah, we were in the Chung King. He was in another room. Party Artie, actually, Method Man was his biggest inspiration. So it wasn't, we didn't call him in the studio to ask him to do a song. I called him in the studio to meet Party Artie. Huh? When he's in the song, he's hearing the beat. What's that? Now we just finished this. Now I got to drop something on that. He went and dropped the verse and left.
Huh?
And it was dope. Then he came back. Yo, I said that rhyme on something else. I can't do that. And went and did another verse.
Wow.
And laid that. And that was just dope. You know what I mean? Because I'm a big supporter of Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's our Bizarro image right there. Yeah. Wu and Diggin.
Yeah.
Almost mirrors each other.
Yeah. It's a lot of similarities street-wise, music-wise.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely. So, OC, I noticed you were talking about DJs and producers sort of living with records and having a say. There's something I noticed about you and guest appearances on your records, which is you don't have very many guests, but when you do, you really play to their strengths. The song concepts and sometimes even your own rhymes will be like designed to showcase them in some way.
I experienced that firsthand.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's chemistry with him when we're in the studios.
Yeah.
It's always dope.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That type of collaborative approach is really unusual, especially in rap. Like, most rappers aren't really known for being selfless and being like, here, let me help you shine.
Yeah, nah.
Berry Love on Mugshot Preloaded.
Yeah.
I actually waited a week to do that song until he did his part, and that's my album.
Because
I knew what he would bring, and I knew the energy I would feed off of him doing that.
We knew our strengths and weaknesses, but I think we've been applying that to music going back to Goodfellas, Runaway. Well, more or less Goodfellas when he put on a lot of his dudes on the album.
Right.
So I've tried to, whoever I, not to say they was whack, or I mean, I haven't really did a lot of collaborations, like right. you said, Freddie Fox and Big L. And
yeah, that's the cool. name is on yeah. his hand. That's yeah. crazy.
Yeah.
You know, anything outside of that was soundtrack.
Jay-Z did a hook.
Oh, Jay-Z did a chorus for me.
Mm-hmm.
Clockers.
Right, but like the Freddie Fox joint, that really like played to his strengths, like conceptually.
That was him.
And, yeah?
Yeah, that was Showsman. I didn't know Fox at the time. I knew of him, but he was one of my favorite unknown MCs that I knew about, going back to Crazy Like a Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with the ideas for M.U.G.
Mm-hmm.
and Win the G. Those is his ideas. And I played to his strengths. Like,
yeah.
this is what, I don't know what to do to these premiere beats. And he was like, this is what you should do. And I just said, go ahead. And we came up with it.
AG, I wanted to say something about Reality Is, which is...
The Oasis album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You talk really supportively about the shift in commercial rap dominance to the South. You have that line about, they say the crown left town and lived down south. I see it as our baby growing, right?
For sure.
A lot of other New York City rappers, they weren't so nice about the shift to Southern rap. They weren't so supportive. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings about that era, about when sort of commercial dominance shifted to the South, and why you took such a different stance than a lot of other, you know, veteran New York City rappers?
I mean, from its inception, this was supposed to be global. We didn't know it in 73. This is supposed to be worldwide. It's a form of expression, of the youth expression. It's a form of urban expression. That's unique around the world. That's not just in one place. And sooner or later, it had to grow if it was as dope as we said it was.
Mm-hmm.
So when it goes to Cali and, you know, you got NWA and all of them over there doing their numbers, it was supposed to happen. Then it goes down south and now they're doing their numbers. It's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really look at it like, there's certain records I can point out that are just straight horrible from anywhere.
Sure.
I can name 10 whack New York rappers. Like, anywhere you go, you can find what's dope. I just don't like the clones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there's one or two and that's what they do, I'm gonna appreciate that. But if 100 other people come and do that, I'm not maybe so appreciative to the followers.
Yeah.
So if you look at down south, west coast, anywhere, and find the best artists of there, I guarantee you they'll be dope. It's just the influx of clones, and that's happening everywhere.
Right.
That makes it bad.
Rakim said it, man. Anywhere you from is where you at.
Yeah.
For sure. That long
like,
time ago.
Yeah. You can't tell me Scarface is not dope.
Yeah.
That's down south. You understand what I'm saying? You
yeah.
can't tell me Ice Cube isn't dope. So there's dope dudes everywhere. So that's why when a lot of dudes started hating on, oh, the South took over, the South is making this whack, this, that, and third. I mean, that just sounds like complaining to me. You know what I mean? Me and Show have this thing. We can't complain if we're not in the game trying to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So our music really speaks about what we feel. I don't have to down anyone or what they're doing, because truth of the matter is, if a dude is not selling crack and he's selling records now, I think we won. It's a plus.
Right.
Huh. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what I was really basically trying to say.
Excellent. So, OC, I want to talk about he was talking about West Coast rap for a second ago, which mm-hmm. brings me to your song, The Formula, which mm-hmm. is a tribute to the DOC.
Mm-hmm.
In that song, you do something a little unusual. You put him in a class with Kool G Rap and Slick Rick, like that level. Like, he's well-respected, everyone loves that first record,
mm-hmm.
but not a lot of people make that leap to put him on that level. Can you talk a little bit about the DOC, maybe his influence on you, and why you think maybe generally he's not thought of as in that, like, super elite class?
Sometimes it only takes one album to put you in that class. That's number one. Number two, how you think Snoop is doing so... I mean, honestly, yeah. like, the early...
No, he's open about
Death Row, this is DOC. He has no voice, though, but he's a writer. Yeah. So he's telling them, nah, don't do that. Change that line. He's contributing what he would have done had he not had that accident, interjected it into Snoop and the Dog Pound and whoever else is over there. This dude is a writer. He helped Dre 2001, like the first Chronic, the second Chronic. Like, but for me, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not the first one to mention it. Jay-Z mentioned it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That, you know, like the whole DOC was a lyricist. First of all, he's from Texas.
Right.
You know what I mean? And a Texas dude went to LA. Outside of Cube, everything after that was just different to me in that camp. And I think he's the major role. He played a major role in that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not afraid to say it. This dude, A, right here, shows me stuff. In turn, we show each other stuff. He just said it. He didn't record the record until I came in. Like, I couldn't have done Weed and Drinks without him. What I was going to do, write his part. So DOC for me is the last Poets. Like, I think they put out one record, two records. Like,
I'm not sure.
And listen to that record to this day, man. Like, he revolutionized a lot of MCing in that record.
I bought that album on vinyl, and I don't buy nothing.
Yeah.
But at the time, you had to have it.
You had to.
We may look back on hindsight and be like, DOC, because the longevity wasn't there. But what he did work on and what he did do,
classic.
It was crazy.
And, you know, we the behind the scenes, we pay attention to behind the scenes, I guess, because we're the artists. So we know what he did after the accident.
You can hear it in the Snoop records. Come on, man. There's no...
You know, I think they leaked, not to keep it going, but I think they leaked, like, live footage of when Snoop early on, before, like, right before Deep Cover.
Yeah.
And you listen to the stuff he was rhyming, and then you hear Deep Cover, and then you hear the Chronic. I hear DOC's influence. Yeah. I hear it, you know what I mean? And I just feel like people don't give him enough... respect. Yeah. I think he's in that category, Kane, G-Rap, and all of them, Slick Rick. His storytelling, everything.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
That's dope.
Thanks, man.
We'll be right back with the rest of our talk with AG and OC. You're listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. You can see both rappers' verified Rap Genius accounts by going to rapgenius.com and clicking on the Verified Artists tab. Welcome back to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. We begin the second half of our conversation with AG and OC by asking AG why he's so strange.
So, AG, I wanted to jump in. You have that one line that really caught my attention where you say, I'm a weirdo with a weird flow, right?
Yeah.
How would you describe, as a rapper, how would you describe your flow and why call it weird? Like, what about it is weird to you?
I never, to me.
Yeah.
I don't think I had a flow that was consistent. Like, if I rhymed this way on day one, I couldn't duplicate it. I might try, but on this song, it'll come out like this. And this song, it wasn't really like a style. It was really on the beat. So if you hear a lot of my early stuff, I go off beat a lot. But as you listening to me go off beat, you don't catch it when I'm back on beat, because it's like, dang, you have to rewind and be like, dang, he sounds a little off. But before you know it, I'm back on.
Right.
And it keeps doing that. That's just the flow I have. Because I think, like, Thelonious Monk, I read that he hears his scales differently than the average musician. You may hear four count. He hears three counts.
Yeah.
whatever. I think musically I hear something totally different. And that causes the flow to be weird and off balance and, you know, whatever.
Awesome. Oh, I wanted to ask you about the, on your records, ever, you know, on the first album and thereafter, mm-hmm. you have these little intros. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of a two-part thing. First is like, you have these little intros that have an entirely different beat than the rest of the tune. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I don't think I've ever heard anyone else do with that kind of regularity.
Right.
So can you tell me about where you came up with the idea for that, why you decided to do that?
That was probably Buck. Mm-hmm. And just listening, well, that time, now I'm in with Digging Now. So listening to my crew's records, I think we had a signature with production. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to Finesse's records, you listen to Sean A's records, Diamond's records, they had interludes, intros on certain things. And I guess subconsciously I was following suit, mm-hmm. you know, giving my interpretation of how I would start my record off, or fade from an interlude into another song. And for me, I just always like listening to a change up.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna throw you a curveball with now, I'm gonna throw you a fastball, and it just happened like that.
It's dope.
Yeah, and yeah. So your most the intro that inadvertently became the most famous was the one for Point of Views, mm-hmm. when it kind of reappeared, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years later, yeah. as another song. And I was, I mean, what? How did you feel when you first heard that?
I mean, it's hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, are we talking about the Jay-Z record?
You talk about the Jay-Z, yeah. For anyone, for our listeners who don't know, the intro to Point of Views
Jay-Z
is pretty
record.
Much exactly the same beat as Public Service Announcement on the Black Album.
Yeah,
10 years later.
The PSA, the it's a toss up with me and Mr. Wall. Even we always, you know, play though, but we laugh and debate because they used it too. Mm-hmm. For the Black Moon, a Black Moon joint. And that was hip hop, man. Like, mm-hmm. Show, Q-Tip, Finesse, Diamond, Buck, all have the same record, but they'll take a part from that same specific joint and flip it different.
Yeah.
And that's the skill in Digging. And what I did with the interlude is what I heard. I didn't hear a song on it. Mm-hmm. What Jay did with it, I give kudos where it's due. Mm-hmm. He flipped that. He killed that. I don't think nobody could touch that after that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hear a lot of stuff pop up on other people's records. It's a lot of songs from our stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as a whole, as the group,
we take a little pride and game wise among each other. We'll never do it on interviews or whatever.
Yeah,
but we know who's used our stuff, and the way they used it, we know if they got it from us or not.
Yeah,
and we are flattered. We're not there like this dude. That's not mm-hmm. what we do, because then we would be hypocrites. Soul Clap is a James Brown record,
right?
How can I get mad at someone else? You know what I mean? Like, for instance, Naughty by Nature, if you look at Uptown Anthem, mm-hmm. that's Soul Clap. Mm-hmm. He just played it over. But KG, let us know. Yo, this is going to be crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Yeah.
So, it's showmanship. It's also like, all right, that's dope. Nowadays, it's too personal. You're stealing records from someone else, and you're mad someone else is stealing your record. Now, if that person's getting paid for it and you created it, then of course you should get something out of it or whatever.
Right.
In that case.
And the irony of it is, Fudge Pudge, before I knew them, is the same sample as Soul Clap.
Yeah. Yes.
So there was that connection even before you guys met in person.
It was a connection.
Christopher Williams used it in his song, you know, Puerto Rico, oh, that's Soul Clap. Mm. It's all, I feel good every time I hear it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not one of those, It's art. It's creative.
Nice. You guys obviously have a pretty big extended crew. Some members sadly aren't with us anymore. Party Artie, who you talked about, is sort of, you know, sure. your guiding spirit
GD.
In some ways. Yeah.
GD
and L, of course. Yeah, he's making that L sign. So a lot has been said about L and his style and his rhymes and what he could have been if he had survived and everything. What's something about him that, you know, personally, that we would be surprised to know?
He was a comedian. He was a comedian. He would have us all here laughing right now in this whole interview. Wow. But he had a real serious side, too, so you might have saw that side. Mm-hmm. But among family, he was a real good, happy dude. I'm saying very witty.
Know how to get under your skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be a few arguments.
Yeah. But he did it on purpose.
His two dudes that he want to argue about all day is Granddaddy IU and Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah.
Those are his favorites. Mine is Rakim, so we used to argue all day about Granddaddy and Rakim and Kane. We did it so much so one time at a show that we did it before the show and I lost my voice. And when it was time to perform, I couldn't perform.
Wow.
Yeah. Dope dude.
That's awesome. Obviously, I wanted to jump into something real quick. In a lot of your work, through your whole catalog, there's a lot of biblical imagery. And I was just wondering why you keep coming back to that.
I don't know. It's subconscious. Like, current events, what's going on in the world, everyday life. It's not on purpose, man. It's just whatever I'm feeling or thinking at that moment or for the particular record, it just comes out. Honestly, I don't listen to albums after I record them. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to listen to the stuff so when we going on the road,
right.
Make sure. But I ain't thinking my stuff is biblical and crows flying. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really have no answer to that.
Okay. It seems like, that's fine. that's an answer too. You know what I mean? It seems like with the Trophies record, your latest, you know, the latest full-length thing, it's really self-reflective. You know what I mean? It's really looking back on your life, looking back on your own history and your own catalog.
Yeah.
A lot. Why do that now?
I mean, because it's part of your life. You get flashbacks about things. You could just, you could be walking up the street or Ray, and something might just come to your head from yesterday or 10 years ago, and you'd be like, wow, deja vu. Yeah. Or, I don't know, man. It's just, that's life, man. Everyday life. I don't want to sound corny, but I did a song on Oasis, my solo journal, Oasis, called Everyday Life. Like, he called me every morning, I call him, or it's like, fuck you. I don't want to hear from you for a few weeks, or A had disappeared and go to Arizona somewhere, and it's like, damn, he's not picking the phone up. But I know this is him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he'll call me 2 weeks later, yo, I'm in Arizona, man. Like, I'm just chilling. And it's just like, man, fuck you, man. Like, you could have called thing. That's A. So it's just everyday life scenarios, how we actually are. Like, I don't expect him to call me every time, you know, when he feel like he's going out of town. Or it's just what it is. But as far as the reflection on what I've done, is just, it's subconscious. I mean, for the record, a lot of people got it confused about the intro to the record. Like, and it's not the case. The intro is not directed towards younger dudes, you know, what material stuff. We did the same things when we was younger. Probably not to that extreme, but we did the same things the young cats is doing now. And I can't criticize and judge and scrutinize them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the record Trophies is based on O.J. Simpson. People don't know that. I mean, the Trophy idea comes from him going to jail for his Heisman Trophy. He didn't get locked up for murder. He was acquitted.
Right, you know, but for selling the trophy.
But for selling the trophy and pulling his gun out and freezing.
Yeah.
We got you now, nigga. That's how they basically had it in for him. You beat this murder rat. And that's where I got the ideas, Trophies, from.
Nice.
It's crazy.
Nice.
Yeah. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump back to Runaway Slave for a second, which is like a couple tunes on there. There's a lot of different subject matter and whatever on there, but like on that record, there's a real sense of like being playful and being silly and stuff that's not really there on a lot of your later work. And I was just wondering if you could talk about that, maybe why that shows up so early and, you know, maybe is not there later.
I think at that time, it was more comfortable to be playful and silly. There was a lot of other groups out.
Brand Nubian did a lot of that stuff. Definitely.
Not only that, just other groups, Criss Cross. It's a lot of things going on at that time that people ain't so harsh, so hard up. You know what I mean? And as times changed, so did my music. In 95, me and Show were arrested for murder on the day of our album, Goodfellas, dropping. The silliness and fun stopped then. That was the last record we recorded with a major label, and the rest was a grind from then on.
Yeah,
I think it was just a reflection of what I was going through.
Wow, that's intense. I wanted to ask something else, which is, you know, throughout your catalog, there's various references to NGE stuff, 5% stuff. You talk about Supreme Mathematics, knowledge of self, whatever. And obviously, at the time you started your career, that was unavoidable in New York City. You know, there was literally no way not to run into NGE stuff, 5% or stuff. It's especially in the hip-hop world. What's been the influence of the NGE on your work, either the, you know, friends you've had or concepts or your own relationship to it or whatever?
Pretty much in life, I've been a floater and a drifter. Just trying to find my way, you know what I mean? A lot of the time it was on my own, trying to find my way. And nothing, you know, I did the church thing. I did a lot of things, soul searching, at a young age as well. Because you try to find the meaning, why, to a lot of questions. Why is this? Why is this? Why is my pops not here? Whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And the first time that I realized that the power is inside me, it's the same power that created everything here, I identified with that. I never really was fond of looking for a source of power outside of myself. That just didn't make sense to me. And once, you know, I ran across the lessons, and a lot of these, the lessons that that I read, I identified with right away. You know what I'm saying? And mathematics is used everywhere, whether it's from knowledge to zero or one to zero, knowledge to cipher or one to zero. Mathematics rules the universe. And that's the key fundamental to lessons in the Nation of the Gods. It's mathematics. Some of the lessons were written in allegory, some future, past, some may never have it existed, but the way it was taught you how to use your mind on mathematics, you could weigh anything in the universe, and that's something that will never ever be left out of my music. In one form or another, it's going to be represented, because that's who I am, for sure. I went to D.W. Clinton in the Bronx, quote unquote school of the gods. They have 4,000 students there, 1,500 with 5%.
Wow.
It was natural. It was evident.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It was destined.
AG's a genius, though.
Nah, we all are.
Side all that. Yeah, he don't like me saying it, but I sit and see, this is one thing people can't suck up their pride sometimes and learn. And I know a lot, but you never know everything.
True.
And if I don't know something, I ask. And just sitting down and building with him, his mind, he talking about, I'm crazy, he's crazy. Yeah. So sometimes I watch him or listen to him talk for a couple of hours about what him and Show is building on, they debating, and I'm like, man, I gotta leave the room because it's too much to process. And I'm like, where's this dude? He reads a lot of books, a lot of literature and stuff, but some of that shit don't come from books, man. It's just... Most geniuses are just, like, out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out there.
So A was talking about, you know, NG 5% or stuff, mm-hmm. and you know, spirituality more generally, mm-hmm. which brings me to your Jewels record. I mm-hmm. feel like if I'm hearing it right, that was recorded in a real time, like spiritual crisis in some way. At least that's how it seems to me.
What do you mean?
Like the Crow and all those joints, like, just seemed like maybe you were sort of going through something during the writing of that record.
Not really. I think the process of the record was the transition from sitting around 2 or 3 years after Word Life came out. I toured a lot, but I was ready to get in and do the next record. And like he said early on, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a big gap between 1 year to the next year. So 1 year to 2 years later, you know what I mean? I was in a whole different space with Jewels. Mm-hmm. And now it was time. I was kind of getting sucked into the business, dealing with all these industry wigs and, you know, these suits. And they was like, you gotta make these kind of records. And I was like, nah. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing what I want to do. And I wasn't feeling that. So I just did the record I felt like I wanted to do. And a lot of the producers from Illmatic I wanted to use on the first album, but none of them dudes were fucking with me. They didn't know me, number one. Number two, you know, I felt like, you know, damn, if I could get something from, I would really enhance and bring out, and, you know, later on for Jewels and Preem.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that was a blessing, but I just wanted to be heard, man, and just do things that's not ordinary in my mind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Not just try to make a radio record. Dangerous is a Park Jam, Seventh Wonder is the original record.
Yeah.
You know, that me and L recorded, and the producers and Diggin was like, I'm not touching that shit. I'm like, yo, it's a Park Jam. They're like, nah. Finesse was like, no. A.O. Show's like, nah, I'm not. Fuck out of here. And even Buck was like, man. So I said, yo, Warp, here's a check for X amount of dollars. Because Warp is the epitome of no when it comes to Digging. Beat Money, he was like, hell. I'm like, dawgs, this is a record that they played in the parks. Like, come on, man, the break part. It was either that record or the Airport 77 joint with the colorful collage record it used to look like. And I chose the Seventh Wonder. And me and L made something out of it. It was probably my biggest commercial record, mm-hmm. if you want to call a commercial record commercial. Like, that was my biggest commercial record, but it went ahead and it stopped. I didn't want to make it, you know, go that.
Right.
That route.
You've talked about that on one of your tunes. You talked about how after Word Life, you were in a position where people were coming to you and saying, you can be a trend chaser, you can have hits, and that you didn't do that.
Yeah. I mean, Fat Joe heard the Change of Faces record on Jewels and was like, that's a hit. And this is Fat Joe from 97, 98.
Yeah.
That dude was like, yo, that's the one. And we was like, you know, all of us like, nah. It was just a record fitting what the music was, but that's not what we do. But then we all got kind of sucked up a little bit. You know, you lose sight sometimes. And, you know, I'm not saying I regretted it, but I was like, damn. But it was something everybody was doing. Get some R&B dude or R&B chick on your record, and that's the video. And
I was I wonder if you had any regrets about that, about not delving into that, you know, sort of chasing after trends a little bit.
Well, people said it about...
We wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah. They said it about Yvette Michelle, but that wasn't that kind. It was too long to be a commercial record. It was too complex. It had scratches in it. Like,
yeah.
That's what I heard. You know what I mean? And that's just what it was.
Awesome. On I Just Get Along, you talk about, you say, you know, the words sound better over a show. And I was wondering what it is about his beats that work with your rapping style.
Inside, you know a metronome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think each one of us has one inside of us. His beats go to my metronome. Like,
wow.
I really never heard a show beat that was I couldn't rhyme over.
Mm-hmm.
With me, I always wanted to perfect my craft, and early on, I would have trouble with certain beats. You know, yeah. That's just how it is. I've never had trouble with any of his music. It always hit me right there.
Yeah.
I was always able to express myself fully. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
that's big for me. You know what I mean? I'm always trying to be clear. That's one of my things. I want the flow to be on point. I want my concept to get across. I want you to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
The best way I can do that and maximize that is if I'm totally in marriage with the music. And it's like that when we record.
Awesome. Kind of changing topics for a second.
Mm-hmm.
That Constables on your first record.
Mm-hmm.
That talked about, you know, police abuse, and it even talked about racial profiling, even before that concept was really widely known by a lot of people. How do you feel about the increased attention, especially in New York City, to, like, racial profiling and stop and frisk and stuff like that?
I mean, it's been happening. It's been happening before the 90s, the 80s. It's always been stop and frisk. It just wasn't called that. But that record was just... I had an actual experience. That's why I wrote the record. And, you know...
Do you want to talk about it?
I mean, it was simple as a police stop. You know what I mean? And let me see your ID. And the car I was driving. And, you know, that's my first record. So, I was driving a nice car before I recorded the album. Like I said, we all had all that shit. It didn't. That's not why we made records. But anyway, I got stopped. You know, they stopped me because of the car. So right off the bat, you're a crack dealer.
Yeah.
Which it's understandable because maybe the late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, that's what was popping. You know what I mean? And that's what people was doing. But they had no reason to stop me. I wasn't speeding, I wasn't smoking no weed, you know, I wasn't driving reckless, and it was just a no-brainer. And, you know, they gave me a ticket for, I think, a loose headlight, and, you know, I asked him, could I get out the car? He let me get out the car. I asked him, can I open my trunk because it's a loose headlight? He let me do it, which is... You know, thinking back, that wasn't too smart. And I told him what I was going to do because the headlight, and he let me do it, and the headlight came back on, and he still gave me the ticket.
Wrapping up, you know, one or two more things for you guys. On Oasis, you have this line about, you can go and ask your favorite rapper about me. Right? So for both of you, who's been the most surprising or, you know, noteworthy or really, oh my god, I didn't know that person liked me, artist to ever give you guys, each of you, a cosign?
For me?
Yeah.
Recently, I've been I hate name dropping, but...
Yeah. What the hell?
I've been corresponding with Redman a lot. And I didn't call him a liar, but he was like, yo, we've been listening to y'all since you. And I'm like, we don't make the same, like, word. And he was like, yo, dogs, I've been wanting to do a song with you since 94. And I was like, and yo, he's just a funny dude, man. He reminds me of Party Artie and, you know, that whole How High. He's really like that. And I guess he's a serious dude, too. I haven't been around him enough. But for Redman to tell me that he's been a fan of my music, you know, I still got to digest that. And he's like, you bugging out, man. Like, he knows all of our shit.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole crew, like, and it's just weird. Because I ain't think them kind of dudes was paying attention. He's the more social dude. I'm social, but... So I think A might have, and I might be lying, he might have more relationship, what's up, dogs, with other MCs than me.
Right.
Me, I'm just like, show me and him more or less like peace, and that's it. And eight ball players and professional basketball, that's not, I just never got drawn into that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like, I was never, I guess my energy never had them come up to me. I had a ball player, Kenny Anderson, years ago, was like, yo, I got your stuff in all my cars. And I was like, yeah, all right. But, you know, looking back, that wasn't cool to just be like, maybe I thought he was showing off, but he couldn't have been showing off. Like, right. He was like, yo, I got your shit in my cars. Like, I'm like, you Kenny Anderson, man. Like, you listen to my shit. Like, you ain't listening to Hov in them and Nas in them. And he was like, I'm listening to your shit, man. And I was like, wow, that's dope.
That is dope.
Yeah. What about you, Annie? Who's the person who most sort of really caught you by surprise when they said, like...
Well, being in the craft we in...
Yeah.
I expect, and this is how other MCs to know who we are, because I know who you are. And if you're on top of your game and you don't know about OC or AG, then something's wrong. So I would have to say Erykah Badu.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I have a documentary coming out, and she seen the film guys that were doing it and told them, nah, y'all gotta come. They were in the club. She made them come to her studio. Like, nah, we gotta do my part over here. And, you know, her talking about, you know, she's up on show and AG joins. Y'all got millions and millions of Adams out here, MCs that y'all done created, enough respect and all that. That was big to me, because that's not the last person I thought would know who, what our music was about. Even though you can tell she's into the NG, you know, she knows lessons because of her music. But at the same time, I just didn't know she was on our frequency. So that was dope as well.
Sorry.
One more dude, yeah. I got to say, it's Tretch, man. From Naughty. Like, Tretch is... I met Tretch from day one, and he's been the same dude when they blew up, quote unquote, to the dude he is today. Mm-hmm. Like, Tretch don't punch nobody in the face that don't deserve it. Yo, pardon me, Tretch, but like, people always try to say like he was always but this dude never showed a bad energy. And I seen him from beginning to prime to now to move. He's always been a down to earth dude, and I can't say that about too many people. I met people, but that's he dope. Sticks out.
That's dope.
Yeah.
If you make a reference to Fat Pockets and show, it says to work hard, you got to work hard like Naughty by nature to understand.
Yeah.
When we were doing our promo runs, right?
Yeah.
Every radio station, every one stop we went to, we were passing each other.
Wow.
And so, and we know our schedule. We're up at 8, we're going to sleep at 3. This is every day trying to work soul clapping these records.
Yeah.
And every spot we start, they will be leaving, or we will be leaving, and they're coming. And that mutual respect was always there. And he's, like he said, since that time to now, he's always been the same person, MKG and Vin Rock.
Mm-hmm.
That's some real dudes right there. One person didn't say anything, but I remember being at Radio City Music Hall for the first day of the 1993 tour.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't on it at the time. And Ben Vereen had on a Showbiz and AG hoodie. And that was like everything to me.
Ben Vereen.
Wow. Yeah.
He didn't even know I was AG probably at the time.
Wow.
He couldn't see me. It was crowded. We're going to the bathroom, intermission. And I'm looking like, who's that with that Show and AG hood on? And as I got close, it was Ben Vereen. So the guy brought him up. That was... People that aren't in the craft surprised me more than the people that
are. People are in it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, one final thing that I wanted to, you know, since you are here and, you know, it's Rap Genius, we always, you know, like to get people's impressions of the site. I sort of showed it to you both earlier, and I was just wondering if I could get your impressions about the site, what you guys thought about it, and,
all right.
and that kind of stuff.
I think it was definitely unique. Something that you can interact with. And lyrics are very important. If some certain lyrics are taken the wrong way, it can lead to life and death situations.
Yeah.
So to have that where artists can come, clarify their lyrics, other people can come and tell you what these lyrics meant to them,
You know, I think that's a great and genius thing. You know what I mean? And it's something that I'll be playing a part of, you know, from now on as well, because that's what I'm into.
Excellent.
I mean, for me, it's like, you hear a lot of politicians, you know, older people talk about these lyrics are raunchy. You know, they get kind of turned off by the aggression of hip-hop and rap. I think if they go on things like Rap Genius and look at people's lyrics, it might change their mind about how they think about the music we make. Because they just think it's noise. You know, my mother used to be like, that's noise. That's hip-hop. And my mother's almost 7. And I've heard other older people say, that's just noise. You know what I'm saying? But they don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, but you gotta
read it.
You gotta read it and put yourself in the position and look at it to see what's going on. Maybe you can't. I think the drums should motivate you, but that's just me.
Right.
But I think that's an outlet for younger people, elders, to read what we're writing and say, damn, that's, I didn't know he was that deep, or he had a brain on his shoulders, like a head on his shoulders.
That's dope.
We're not stupid.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
I would like to add on.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Hey, you can add
the reason we're here.
Yeah.
Is Love New York, July 17th.
Absolutely.
We must stress that.
Mm-hmm.
Red Apples 45 is the label, produced by Ray West.
Ray West.
We want to thank Ray West for making this possible.
Absolutely.
Because he's the one that made this possible. You know, we want to thank Rap Genius for making this possible.
Appreciate it.
Also, Mugshot Preloaded Remixes will be released July 17th, the same day.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And if you're familiar with mathematics, like I tell you, the 17th equals AG. So I have two projects coming out on the same day. One is more of a group thing with us.
Mm-hmm.
One is Showbiz and AG. So July 17th, let me know you're in the building. Holler at us, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know you're supporting this music, and let us know that these interviews are worthwhile. You know what I mean? Because to sit up here, we could talk for hours, but if we don't see feedback from it, the artist doesn't gain. So we want to make sure everybody's happy, win-win. Digging in the crates, me and O was working on Oasis 2, Immortals.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot more music in store. I mean, and I'm not just saying that, we have a lot more music in store. So
me, Bumpy, and Preem got an album we about to start in a minute. You know, I gotta make sure my brethren and
yes,
we do our thing first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna throw an early dart. I did an album with Ray West called
It's
Ray's
crazy.
Cafe.
It's crazy.
Wow. All right.
You know,
it's crazy.
Trophies in stores, and you're not gonna see less of us now. You're gonna see more
of us. With quality.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Red Apples 45, our slogan is quality records made mm-hmm. in the Bronx. You know what I mean? We be in that basement and we just going all out. We got mm-hmm. the AG and Party Art EP, Dancing in the Rain. That's on deck. AG and John Robinson, produced by Ray West. That's on deck. AG and Rock Mars, we worked on a project together. It's just a lot of work. You know what I'm saying? A lot of work. D-Flow's solo project, first album. So we're doing a lot of things, and we just want to let the music speak for itself. You might not see us in other genres, or I mean, other genres outlets with a lot of video play or radio play, but if you search for the real, you can find it.
I ain't said it, man. We like roaches, man. Underground. They never die, man. Like, this is what it is. And like I said, Trophies, Ray's Cafe, the Preem Bump OC album, the O and AG, Immortals, Oasis. We don't know where we going, but we headed on that path, and we gonna flood this, but with quality music, yeah, not quantity,
not oversaturated. Yeah. Just a lot of music for them years we haven't been. We gonna make up for that.
And I gotta say this real quick: you don't fall off as an MC and fall back on.
It's impossible.
It's impossible. So for those saying that we came back as a comeback, like Mama said, knock you, it's not happening, man. We never fell off, man. It was just silent.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, so much incredible music coming
Mama
out.
Mama said if you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all.
That's right.
So much incredible music coming out. AG, OC, master producer Ray West.
Red Apples.
Red Apple 45. and Rap Genius.
Yes, sir.
All right.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. If you're curious about any of the songs mentioned on this show, you can find lyrics, audio, and explanations at rapgenius.com. Rap Genius is dedicated to decoding, annotating, and analyzing hip-hop lyrics. Join us next week when we share what happened when we visited the New York premiere of Ice-T's movie, The Art of Rap. We talk to rap legends old and new, from Busy Bee to Fabulous, and you'll hear it all. In addition, we have a discussion about the business of hip-hop with Jay-Z biographer and Forbes writer Zach O'Malley Greenberg, the man responsible for the magazine's popular Hip Hop Cash Kings series. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is hosted and written by Sean Sotero, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. To make sure you never miss an episode of the show, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can reach me with your thoughts about Outside the Lines via Twitter. I'm at Same Old Sean. That's S-H-A-W-N. This podcast was recorded and engineered by Brian Penny at the beautiful Three Egg Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Research assistance on this episode by Deep Illa. Intro and outro music by Psionic. Interlude music by Sir Lauren. Special thanks to Nicole Witty Solomon. I'm your host, Same Old Sean, and I'll see you next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.